You're listening to Civics 101 coming to you live. Well, not live. We're a podcast, but coming to you from Washington, D.C. We are sitting around a dining room table in the house we're all sharing as a radio team. And we're going to tell you a little bit about our day yesterday and our day today. But before we do, who are you?
My name is Nick Capodice, and I work for Civics 101 at New Hampshire Public Radio.
I'm Hannah McCarthy.
I'm Christina Phillips.
I'm Felix Poon, producer of Outside In.
All right, so let's go through it. I feel like it's been 1,000 years since yesterday, but what was yesterday like for you?
Last time we spoke, I was about to go to speak to somebody from the Washington Center, and that's who I spoke to yesterday. So I told you a little bit about what the Washington Center is. Are you aware, Felix, of what the Washington Center is?
I'm not aware of the Washington Center.
I'm so glad you're here, Felix.
I'm so glad you're here to explain it.
The Washington Center is one of several organizations that take students who, you know, aren't sure exactly what they want to do for life or for a career, but have an interest in politics or like an interest in DC, and does internships with them. This is a nonprofit it's almost like a pipeline to politics. So if you want to work as a staffer, or you know, you want to, you know, do something else, maybe in the executive branch at one of those myriad agencies in the executive branch, these are the people who can tell you what's what in DC. And we spoke with and Hannah was there too. We spoke with Kim Churches. She's the president of the Washington Center. Do you have any questions about me or the show or what I'm going to be asking you about today?
No. I'm good.
You are?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite topics. So.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
So to start off, let me see. I think to start, can you just tell me what is the Washington Center?
Sure. The Washington Center was created 50 years ago to provide more access to workplace learning.
And she broke down some cool stuff that I'm excited to share with in an episode. And I think my favorite thing that she told me, Hannah, was she almost compared it to, like, it wasn't just learning who people are or how to do jobs. So much of what you do in DC are sort of like soft power skills. There are skills of like how to read a room, you know, how to say the right thing, how to present yourself to a room, how to judge when somebody is bored. When is brevity important? When is waxing philosophic important? She said that is just as important as like good writing skills and good editing skills. I thought that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Let's hear from Christina. Christina, your yesterday.
So my yesterday, I went to the Bureau of Engraving and Printing for a tour. Now, this is where the paper money is made in the United States. There are two of them. There's one in D.C. and one in Fort Worth. The Bureau of the Mint does the coins. So you're not allowed to take in any cameras, no phones, no photos, no video, anything, because it's a very secretive process and they don't want anyone to take that information out. So I couldn't even like answer my text messages. But one thing I did learn while I was in there, I heard that they were building another Bureau of Engraving and Printing to print more money. And I said, but we don't really use paper money that much anymore. Why do we need to print more money? Why do you need a new facility, a third facility? And she said, you know, for every dollar in every bank account, there has to be a paper version. So as we have more money, there must be paper versions of that money. So, you know, if you have a couple thousand dollars in your bank account, that exists as paper money somewhere, most likely in a federal bank. And that blew my mind. I was like, whoa, I never thought of that. So that was my fun fact there. Nick, you're looking at me with your mouth open.
That amazes me. That confuses me. And we like talked a tiny bit about this at lunch today.
Yeah.
But I don't understand it. I don't understand how every dollar that everybody, every bajillionaire in the U.S. owns, there is a paper version of it somewhere. How is that possible?
Yeah. I don't know. We were trying to figure out if it's a closed system or an open system. This is now something we're going to have to look up.
Rain? You know, like nothing leaves, nobody ever goes in, nobody ever goes out.
Yeah, and like what happens with currency? Like if you exchange currencies and I don't know.
I feel like a big part of the problem is that like it kind of is philosophy or it's almost like we're talking about magic because it's not even real. You know, it's like an idea that we made. I mean, I know this is what happens to a lot of ideas is they become reality. But like with money, it's still just an idea that happens to have a piece of paper next to it or mm-hmm. representative of it, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah. I definitely left being like, huh, I think I understand what the printing looks like, but I still don't really understand money at all, even though I've spent a lot of time thinking about the Fed and the Bureau. So then after that, I went to the Capitol and I got a little Capitol tour, which is really a tour of the Rotunda and the Crypt. It was still really, really interesting and very big and sort of amazing from the inside as from the outside. And then I also went to the Museum of American History and had a grand old time and took a bunch of photos and put them on our Instagram story. And then my phone died and then I walked home. So that was my day.
Not bad. All right, Felix, our listeners never get to hear from you.
Yes, please. Indeed. Here I am.
So, Felix Poon, tell us about your yesterday.
So, my yesterday, me and Zoe Knox, our social media producer extraordinaire, we went to the National Zoo. Are there any lions here?
I don't know, actually, but I would love to see a lion as well.
Yeah, let's, there's like a map up ahead. We can see where the lions are.
Keep a lookout for lions and tigers and bears.
Oh my.
Exactly.
And National Zoo is a very special place because it is the only zoo in the country that was established by an act of U.S. Congress. So this zoo is federally funded. So that's why some people refer to it as the People's Zoo or the Nation's Zoo. And Zoe and I got a behind the scenes tour. We got to see the commissary, which is where they prepare all the foods for the thousands of animals that they feed. We got to see meerkats, and they were getting fed different meatballs and mealworms. So that was pretty fascinating. Orangutans climbing above us. My highlight was actually getting to eat Dippin' Dots. I haven't had that since, like, it's been decades.
I think I actually want soaring Raz lemon ice.
Whoa.
That looks tasty.
All right. All right.
What are you getting?
Cookies and cream always.
Okay. And I learned the history of the zoo starting, like I said, it was established by an act of U.S. Congress. But the first animals that were showcased to found the zoo were bison because a taxidermist wanted to highlight the fact that so many bison were being eradicated and that they were nearing extinction. So Zoe and I made sure to go see the bison there. They are not descended from the original bison, but still we thought it was pretty special.
Dumb question. They were a live bison when the first bison, they did not just put the taxidermy there to be like, look at this epic animal that you need to save.
Yeah, there were live bison. I don't remember if it was one or two live bison, but the taxidermist also did a taxidermy a bison as well. So
I have like a really terrible non-outside-in question.
Yeah.
What is the difference between a buffalo and a bison?
You know, I didn't know this myself until yesterday, but there was a sign at the zoo. See, this is zoos educate you about animals. I think buffalo actually refers to a different animal. They showed a picture of a buffalo from Africa, and it does look quite different from the bison, which is a North American animal. I kept saying to Zoe, like, these bison, they're so shaggy. They have a lot of shaggy hair all around them. Like, they looked pretty hot, like, under this DC sun. Like, they must be sweating. Actually, I don't know. I think only humans sweat. So in that case,
the song, home with a buffalo roam in the clouds. And
that's, on the ring.
That's in, thank you.
that's what I'm here for, Anna. Home on the range. That's the name of it.
I think some people might use buffalo and bison interchangeably.
Okay.
So as a kid, when I grew up in, I spent a couple of years in New Zealand when I was a kid, and there was a famous joke is, what's the difference between a buffalo and a bison? Is you don't wash your hands in a buffalo, because you wash your hands in a bison. But it really only works in a
in an Australian
in a New
accent.
Zealand accent, Miss Poon. Yeah, New Zealand, but that wasn't a very good Kiwi accent.
Because you cannot wash your hands in a bison.
Love.
And then last thing I'll say is we did also go to the National Museum of Natural History, where we saw the Hope Diamond, which is heavily featured in Christina's favorite movie. Among many other things, it was a great museum visit.
Whenever I hear Hope Diamond, it makes me think of the introduction to the... It was Mary-Kate and Ashley. They had a detective agency, Olsen & Olsen Detective Agency. The like theme song had a line that was like, "Who stole the Great Hope Diamond? What killed the dinosaur?
Who stole the Great Hope Diamond? What killed the dinosaurs? Who makes the finest pizza? What's in your brother's dresser drawers? Mysteries of life."
I will say, speaking of movies, we did watch the last two-thirds of Titanic last night in honor of the Hope Diamond. We started watching the first third. It was great. I got to just share facts the whole time. It was iconic. Best day ever.
I mean, that was definitely a highlight of yesterday, for sure.
I went to the Australian Embassy with Nick. We got a tour of the building. It's a new building. They just moved in. It's actually quite lovely. And we learned a lot about what embassies do. We also spoke with the ambassador himself, Ambassador Rudd. He is the former Prime Minister of Australia. He spent his entire professional life as a diplomat.
And Ambassador, if I could just have you tell me what you had for breakfast this morning while I check your levels.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock rock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock rock.
That's a lot of rocks for breakfast.
That's right.
All right, that's great. So actually, I'll just have you begin by introducing yourself for our audience so they know who you are.
Hi, I'm Kevin Rudd. I'm Australia's ambassador to the United States, and I live here in Washington, D.C.
The one thing that I was very surprised by is that the Australian embassy is in fact sovereign Australian territory. Forgive me, listener, but I think I Googled this before we went. I was like, is an embassy the other nation's territory, the other nation's land, or is it the United States? And I think the first thing that popped up was like, it was the United States, but that's not the case. It is Australia in there. So that was really interesting.
That is really interesting.
So practically, if you committed a crime on embassy property, you would be charged in Australia, or it would be an Australian crime.
Okay, so I was nodding vigorously thinking if you committed a crime as an Australian in the United States, you would go to the embassy. I suppose so.
Right, because you're under Australian jurisdiction.
Yeah, well, I will email the embassy and I will ask.
I just want to make sure I have my facts straight when I inevitably don't commit a crime on the Australian embassy's campus. It's embassy. Just the things I think about.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about today.
And before that break, if any of you want to follow our adventures here in our nation's capital, you can see our new TikTok channel or Instagram. Both of them are at Civics101Pod. We've been doing a lot of goofy stuff on there. Maybe a little too much Shakespeare, but fun all the same. Oh, and some more petty facts from Christina.
We're back. You're listening to Civics 101, and we are recapping our time here in Washington, D.C. with Nick Capodice, me, Hannah McCarthy, Christina Phillips, and Felix Poon of our sister podcast, Outside Inst.
Woohoo!
I don't know why I'm calling it that. So we're going to talk about what happened to us today, what we did today. So Felix, I would love to start with you. What did you get up to today?
I had a pretty laid-back day. I visited the mothership, National Public Radio headquarters, said hello to my friend Emily Kwong, who is a producer on the Shortwave podcast, and got a little tour. I even saw the tiny desk area. That was a big highlight for me.
That was great.
Yeah. It was a good day.
Yeah. Christina, you had a long day. You did like a number of things today.
Yeah, I mean, and technically only two things, but it was a lot in a good way. I went to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to ask them what they were and how it works and what their relationship is with us as a public media organization. What does public media mean? What's the CPB's relationship with the government? How did it get started? Hopefully to help clarify those questions that I think we get all the time. And then also we sometimes wonder ourselves, like, well, what is the CPB? And now I have a better understanding. But then I came and met up with you all after your morning, which I'll let you talk about. And then we all went over to the Library of Congress, where we went to the Recorded Sound Research Center, which is where they digitize, preserve all kinds of audio from history. And it was fascinating. We talked to some research librarians there. My favorite thing of that was that I work in audio and I did not understand how audio recordings worked until Brian, the librarian we were talking to, showed us what was essentially tinfoil, aluminum foil, and it had lines on it. And he said, this was originally how audio was done. This is an Edison thing where he would record sound on tinfoil. And basically he would have, if you imagine like a pen on a piece of tinfoil that moves with the vibration of sound. So if you speak sound into an amplifier, it shakes the pen, which makes the wave, which is the sound being recorded. I was like, I get it now. So that was like, it was just amazing. And so I'm really excited to share more about sound and the Library of Congress with our listeners.
Yeah, that was cool. Because just being, I think, you know, we work in audio every day. So being in this space was really a delight.
My favorite part of that visit, Christina, was seeing the, I think it was 1912 Edison recording, Roaming in the Gloaming, which is a song that I really hope to recreate at some point.
Wait, so I didn't understand. Do you know that song?
No, no idea how. But it's such, Roaming in the Gloaming.
Roaming in the Gloaming on the banks of clay. Roaming in the Gloaming.
Who wouldn't want to be roaming in the gloaming? You know, like, who wrote Roaming in the Gloaming? And was everybody sitting down like, oh, that one.
I will say that the like one of the best parts of this, and I'm so glad that Nick was able to come with me, was because he looked delighted the entire time. And like everything that Brian was pointing out, Nick was like, oh yes, that. And I was just over there like, I know nothing about sound. I don't know absolutely nothing. And you were just thrilled, and it was so cool. It was special to see both of you just in awe of all of this as well. So
we saw this ancient book of like all the shows that played this one day on this one station on NBC in 1920 whatever, or 1930 or 40 whatever, but we both saw the name Ed Wynn, and we were like, oh, that guy, the comedian, you know, he was in the Munsters. And then we both realized we meant Fred Gwynn, not Ed Wynn. And we looked at each other and like, oh, you know, separated at birth.
By the way, that annotation, so this is basically a record of everything that played from a certain time on a certain day that was broadcast out through NBC's radio waves. And sometimes they would write annotations of like, oh, this also played. That was a song or a sound that said Buffalo.
Yeah.
So we have no idea what it was. Was it Buffalo the city? Was it a Buffalo song? Was it Buffalo noise?
Or was it a bison?
Maybe it's written wrong in this paper. So anyway, yes. Delightful.
Yeah. I woke up early, partially because of sheer excitement, because for the first time in my whole life, yes, but also in my career working at Civics 101, I got to go and sit in on oral arguments for the Supreme Court. It was a truly remarkable experience. You know, I gotta say, you try to be, you know, level-headed, and of course I appeared professional, but on the inside I was just, you know, I'm here, oh, and they're right there, you know. And it was just like, regardless of who those justices are, regardless of how you feel about them, the fact of being in that space and getting to sit there for a 2-hour oral argument and taking the most furious notes of my life was the greatest joy. I mean, it was just absolutely wonderful to listen to the arc of the argument.
So can any member of the public just go and check out oral arguments?
This is a really great question, Felix. Members of the public can go to these oral arguments. However, you have got to stand in line to get in. So if it's a case that is a hot button issue, for example, this particular case pertained to abortion. So there were plenty of people who wanted to be in that room while it was happening. I know that there was a very long line of people who had actually gotten in. I don't know how long the line of people was that had attempted to get in, but not everyone gets in. And people will line up at the crack of dawn, if not prior to. I mean, Christina, you said you saw people camping.
Yeah, there were people that like with tarps and like little sleds that they could sleep in basically the day before. So yeah. And also, I just want to clarify, this was a bit of an unusual case, right? Because oral arguments are typically an hour.
Correct.
And you were there for 2 hours. It was two cases that were similar that were lumped together about what subject?
So this is a consolidated case. Essentially, it's two cases that are similar enough that the argument is going to be the same for both, basically. So they put them into one. You know, you're sitting there and you're looking at these justices and you realize those really are people. Those are, you know, like sometimes it's hard to remind yourself of that when you are so distant from them so much of the time, but they are right there. But yeah, Felix, I mean, yesterday there was a very significant case that a lot of people care a lot about, the immunity trial. Felix, you could have gone to stand in line yesterday if you wanted to.
And the cases that were heard when you went to the oral arguments were about abortion, correct?
So this particular case, it was Moyle v. United States and Idaho v. United States, both of which are about an abortion law in Idaho. Essentially, is it in conflict with a federal provision? That was the idea, and that's what they argued over. And Nick, what did you do today?
So this morning I woke up and I went down to the Supreme Court just to be ready for whenever you got out. Because what I was hoping to do was to catch you and to talk about, hey, what was it like being in there this first time? So I got down there and there were massive protests outside of the courthouse. And it was phenomenal because I was there with my little like Civics 101 mic flag and my microphone and my headphones. And I was pulled aside, I think at least six times, and asked, do you want to interview a person XYZ? Do you want to interview an attorney from blah, blah, blah to talk to you about XYZ? And I was like, oh, no, my colleague, she's the journalist, she's inside. But they were not to be deterred. So I did, I think, five interviews. So I spoke to a doctor. I spoke to an abortion rights advocate. I spoke to abortion rights opponents. There were two podiums that were next to each other. And this will all go into an episode. But it's really strange to hear people from one side of the argument screaming directly at the person at the other podium for the other protest just across a barricade, having a direct one-to-one argument with each other about Margaret Sanger, interestingly.
That's a typical pro-choice person.
8 out of 10 calling Americans people are names. With us.
No, they're not.
8 out of 10 Americans
no,
believe abortion
not.
Is health care.
That's not true.
We want women to live.
No, you don't.
We want to live in a free democracy.
Abortion
shut
kills.
We're going to shut kills. You down in November.
Planned Parenthood's founder.
In November.
Do you
Let's
support Margaret Sanger? Margaret Sanger
we
was a racist.
Majority.
We are if you support Margaret Sanger, who's a racist.
Tomorrow? What are you doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow, Christina and I are going out and we are basically going to try to talk to anybody we can. We're going to start probably with the White House and the Supreme Court. Well, maybe let's start with the Supreme Court, then go to the White House. We can pass by Congress on our way. And I definitely want to get to the Lincoln Memorial because I actually have not been yet. And possibly go see a few other memorials while we're out there, a few other monuments, I should say. So that's my plan. But it's a lot of talking to people on the street and being a person on the street.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the White House, talk to White House protesters, and then I'm going to try to pop over to the Library of Congress to check out that civics education exhibit that they've got, and also a couple of other exhibits that they have available for the public to view at any time. So that's on my list. Felix, what are you doing tomorrow?
I really don't have any plans for tomorrow. I'm just going to hang out here at the house and hold down the fort.
You can come be a buddy wherever. You're always welcome to come follow me around. There will be walking, I promise.
Sounds like fun.
Felix is like, can I say no on mic? I might say no. I won't be offended. Nick, what are you doing?
Tomorrow, Felix, I'm quite jealous. Tomorrow, I'm trying to get in to talk with the congressional reporter at NPR to sort of like, what's your day like? And what's it like to report on the Hill? How has that changed in the last 5 to 10 years? And I'm just trying to nail down a time to go and have the experience you had, Felix. And also what I hope to do, and I don't know if this can happen, but I hope at some point Hannah and I can go to a bar where staffers hang out. Congress is on leave this week, so they're not in, but I still think the staffers might be around, just to sort of maybe see what it's like for these folks when they hang out after work.
Definitely ask what the most popular drink that a staffer orders.
What are the popular
orders, and how can they tell?
Like seasonal drink? It's like, oh, lately they're ordering this a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, like, do Democratic staffers and Republican staffers order different things?
Do they tip differently?
What about lobbyists? I don't know.
All right, everybody, let's wrap. Thank you all for listening. We will check in later. This episode was produced by Rebecca Lavoy. I'm Hannah McCarthy. You're Nick Capodice. You're Christina Phillips. You're Felix Poon. Civics 101 is a production of NHPR, New Hampshire Public Radio. Music, see, this is the thing. This is the one thing we can't do, is music.
Oh, that's true.
There may be music by Epidemic Sound, which is where... And Chris Zabriskie. There will be music by Epidemic Sound and Chris Zabriskie. The music in this episode was brought to you by Epidemic Sound and Chris Zabriskie.
Perfect.